it looks like we're at 5:30. So at this point in time, I would like to call to order and have roll call for the Carson City Redevelopment Authority Citizens Committee.
Chairperson Cardinal.
Here.
Vice Chair Justice.
Here.
Member Barrett.
Here.
Member Hanneman.
Here.
Member Kennedy. Member Powell.
Here.
Member Smith.
Here.
A quorum's present.
At this time, I would like to invite any public comment to come on up and speak to us, with one caveat: if there's something you're going to be talking about on the agenda items tonight, that might be a better time, but open for public comment right now if anyone has any. I see that as a big no, so we'll move for action to approve the minutes of September 4th, 2018.
So moved.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Minutes approved. Quickly moving forward, we'll just get right into the meat of things. So for agenda item 4A, possible action to take a recommendation to the Redevelopment Authority regarding the expenditure of $247,996 from fiscal year 2019 Redevelopment Revolving Fund for the Bob Boldick Theater Seat Replacement Project. Lee.
Good evening. For the record, Lee Plemmel. I'll give a brief report on this particular item in front of you, which, as you mentioned, is to make the recommendation to the Redevelopment Authority to authorize the expenditure. So there's, just a reminder, there is a two-step process in expenditures from the Redevelopment Fund. We do go through, we have for the last few years now gone through this process of creating this tentative budget for future budget allocation plan, as we've called it, and authorize it that way. Things get funded in the budget, so there's actually a process of putting these items in the budget. But in order for them, for us to approve the expenditure, it takes a resolution of the Board of Supervisors after approval of the Redevelopment Authority. So this is the second step in the process. These funds have been budgeted in the budget for this year. Over the last, even into the last couple of weeks, the project design team has been working on the improvements to the theater. So I think the information that I have in the packet is from a bid packet that was just going out or is going out soon or just recently went out. So it's all very short period of time coming up to them looking to close the theater at the end of this year and do the construction. So the recommendation is for RAC to make the recommendation to the Redevelopment Authority to authorize this funding, which has been planned now in the allocation plan since last year. Jennifer Budge here is from the Recreation Department, and she's here in case you do have any questions on the project at all, so she'd be happy to answer them. We were having a discussion just before this meeting, and it relates to the next item and the tentative budget allocations for future years, but it relates to $5,000 for portable sound system that's in there that you'll remember we've discussed in the past and is in there. And we're questioning now, after talking with what Parks and Rec has in their inventory, we are now questioning the need for the purchase of another one. And perhaps she could speak to that, but perhaps the recommendation could include the allocation of those additional funds into this project. Because I know the discussion in the past and with the Board of Supervisors has been to put any unallocated funds or carry forward funds into this project. But that's also for discussion. And again, Jennifer Budge here if you have any questions on the project specifically. Thank you.
Frankly, I think this is a no-brainer. And if you don't mind, Jennifer, I know you'd like to get home, so I'm not going to make any recommendation. I'm not going to have you come up here, okay, unless you wish to. First of all, I think that the $5,000 should be put over into the funding for the seats or whatever, curtains or whatever it is you need. So that would make that go up. But I would like to make a motion to recommend that the full expenditure as shown here be allocated to the Parks and Recreational Division for the new seats within the Bob Boldrick Theater.
Second. Any discussion?
Let's see if there's any public comment under the motion. Perhaps it'd be good to, you could do that.
Any public comment on that? I do have one thing I'd like. Do you happen to have the slide, Lee, that we had with the allocation of the funds, the Excel spreadsheet that just trying to confirm what's on my page is what I remember seeing on that. Yep, with the sound system. Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I, for one, can't wait to sit in those new seats.
I think we all agree on that. Congratulations. Okay, item 4B, kind of what we just talked about. For possible action to approve direction of staff regarding the redevelopment directionary fund tentative allocation plan for fiscal year 2020.
Yeah, I'll give a brief presentation on this too as well. I was going to, I forgot on the last one. We moved quick on that, but Commissioner Hanneman's question she had for me about putting time limits on these things. Actually, on that last one, that would have been the appropriate time, and I had it on here as a draft to put a time limit on it. I think with that particular one, we know the projects going forward, the bids in. If you're comfortable without the time limit, that's okay. But I think that's when we do that second phase in the allocation and they put it in the resolution, that's at the point in time when I would suggest putting a time limit in it and the expiration after which they have to come back to get authorization for that expenditure. So. Sorry, I just wanted to point that out. Moving into this item, this is a discussion item. It's for action to provide direction to staff. This is not a this is not the time when you'll be making the final recommendations on to the Redevelopment Authority. For the last couple years, we've had this item on the agenda at this point in time to allow you to brainstorm some ideas if you have some potential projects or programs in mind that you'd like staff to go back and look into more and obtain information to come back. It will be at the February meeting 2019 when you make the final recommendations on what I'm trying to reterm as the discretionary funds tentative budget allocations. Just a little brief side note on that. I'm trying to get away from calling this a plan. I don't think it's really a plan as intended under redevelopment or NRS because the adoption of plans trigger other disclosures and things, and I think this has always been a planning process with a small p, not a plan with a big P, but it's a tentative budget allocation for future years is what you're looking at making recommendations on. And I'll flip over back to that spreadsheet that I had there because there was just a couple items. You have the full report on there as to an update on the current projects. This is as on here now is as it went to the Board of Supervisors earlier this year for this current fiscal year that we're in and was adopted. This will be the basis by which we make any changes between now and your recommendations in February. Flipping in my notes here. So I've mentioned already the special events and infrastructure, which in addition to the portable event sound system that was allocated actually from last year's budget and just carried forward unspent at this point, we still have $5,000 in this year's budget, $5,000 planned for next year. There's been some discussion with Public Works and Parks and Rec and the Downtown Neighborhood Improvement District folks a bit about additional trash cans, possibly some potential benches. So that is one thing that for that use of funds that I'll try to get more information for you. I don't want to just say let's buy things without having a plan for them where they need to go. So I'll get more information and plan on having more information regarding that for you in February when we come back. The other thing I wanted to note on here, just for you to think about, is the special event funding we've had for a couple years now that's been ramping down 5,000 years every year, excluding the part that's for the arts and culture events. The other general special events funding is scheduled to go down to, as it says in on up there on the screen, by fiscal year 2023 down to $5,000. I assume when we go out beyond that, we're going to keep, maybe it's $5,000, but some in there for those new events that might need a little bit of help. But that's, again, something for you to think about to discuss as we go forward. Downtown gateway signage, looking on here, down about midway down this spreadsheet, is $30,000 in the first column, $5,000 of which has already been approved for expenditure for design. So I'll mention this later. We actually plan on having an item come back in December to you. I'll talk a little bit about that later. But since we allocated that for, I think the idea at this time was some small signage on South Carson Street entering the downtown. Since this was planned for, the city's been awarded the Tiger Grant, a big federal grant, to be able to complete the street, South Carson Street from Fifth Street, from the downtown improvements down to Fairview, which is already a project from Fairview to the freeway that's going to be underway at the same time. So it's creating this opportunity to maybe provide, to maybe have a possibility of a bigger gateway feature. So we're going to bring back some the plan right now, I think, is to bring some design alternatives and discussion in December to RAC. So I think tonight we don't have a lot of information to spend too much time on that, but by December we'll have a real discussion about the future of that gateway feature. And then the last thing I just wanted to mention and talk about, I did provide some late material. I mentioned in the staff report that the Children's Museum has obtained their approval from the Historic Resource Commission and from the Planning Commission for the outdoor improvements to the front of the Children's Museum. I do have the it's in your late material. I have it up here. I think Sherry, the director, is probably here tonight to speak to that if you have any questions about that. And I have this here. So I think with that, you have the report in there. Again, tonight is a sort of a brainstorming session, willing to take direction if you have any questions as to what the future of the allocation of discretionary redevelopment funds will be for the next year. But at this point, I think I'll just stop and take any questions, and then you can open it up to public comment.
I have one for you, Lee. When we're talking about, we kind of skipped over it there for a sec, but the blue line replacement, we've had a lot of discussion up here about detail of what the blue line replacement should be, a repainted line, medallions, various things. Are we anywhere further down the road on that, or no pun intended? But
yeah, so right now, the Culture and Tourism Authority, did I say the name right this time? I always forget the name now. Culture and Tourism Authority is planning on putting in a grant that's due. I want to say it's like coming up in a week or two, to get money for the signage that would go along with the app that they already have. So we are reserving those funds as matching grant funds for that, because the project would then be to have signs at each location. The app is already in place. If for some reason we don't get the app, the plan is to use the funds to remove the blue line, and we still have the app, and then just continue to seek funds for the signage. But so the direct answer to the question, right now we are going to reserve the funds and not do anything to be able to use those funds as the match to try to get the whole project done at once, with including the signs.
And if they don't get the match?
Then the blue line is going to be removed.
Because this has been going on since 2016.
Yeah. So if they don't get the match this time, I think Public Works, that's the discussion I've had with them. It needs we need to complete it.
Just a suggestion as a Nevadan, native Nevadan business owner. Has anyone thought about reaching out for donations to help have this happen? Because I think there's a lot of us here who, you know, bleed the blue blood in our state that would be more than happy to help out with some of the stuff. There's painting organizations and companies and contractors that, you know, whether we paint it or do something else with it. I think there's a lot of options out there that I'm not sure those avenues have been traveled yet, and that might be something people might want to look at.
Lee, also, I'm thinking that one of the line items here, which is the, I guess it's the infrastructure, the second line, that might have to go up in the future, because I'm one of those who brought the trash cans and newspaper boxes or whatever it is to your attention. They look terrible, especially on the east side of Carson Street, and they all really need everything on Carson Street, you know, and the side streets really ought to match. I think as far as benches, we did a very good job in selling the benches. I don't think that needs to be, you know, part of the budget. I think we can go out and sell them again. I know that you keep getting, we refer a lot of calls to you still. And I know of one pretty soon that's coming up. So, but I think that to make it all look uniform and nice downtown, we really need to look at those smaller items that were overlooked before.
Thank you, and I'll get a list of those and take this opportunity to make that plug that there are still plaque space available on benches on McFadden Plaza. And we have been collecting funds, as you know, and those funds go back into the account to buy more benches and other things downtown.
I concur with Ronnie on the newsstands thing. I remember a couple years ago, we had a few years ago, a man presented something he was willing to, willing to help, mm-hmm. or you know, spearhead some effort. So maybe he can just reach out to him if he's not lost interest.
That was the other thing I was going to mention, and because I've recently had that discussion with Public Works about implementing standards and a program, and along with other encroachment permit standards that they're looking at, they're going to start to look into that. So that would be another thing on the list to bring back is trash cans and maybe some help with the rack, with the newspaper racks, if that's even necessary. Because I think, as you mentioned, it kind of sounded like somebody was willing to help us out with that.
And the ones that are right outside your office, sort of at the end, they're never full. I don't even know whether people are, you know, publishing anything anymore. So, I mean, we can
might be a big portion of it right there.
Yeah. So we might just, you know, keep that in mind. So, but they look terrible. It's all about the details, you know.
Anyone else?
And I'll mention something I've raised before, and it's just whether whether it's our remit or not, that the downtown redevelopment area 1 is looking pretty good. The area that is not is the area north of that on Carson Street. So, you know, we've got funds earmarked for going the William Street direction, but I really think we need to have something that looks at what could happen north of, you know, going towards College Parkway, because that's where we've got the vacant lots. That's where we've got, you know, just boarded up buildings in multitude.
Any public comment on our big discussion we just had?
Good evening. Mark Salinas, Arts and Culture Coordinator for Carson City. I'm here representing line item number 7, which is the $25,000 dedicated to arts and culture exhibitions and events in Redevelopment District 1 and 2. So this RAC board has recognized the importance of events as part of the revitalization of the redevelopment district. That's shown in your funding of one-time events such as Taste of Downtown to the fireworks. But it's also represented by not only this board, but boards preceding yours in funding multi-day, sometimes even year-round arts and cultural events. We're actually in one of those environments right now with the funding that RAC provides. It reaches out and affects all of us here on a daily basis. So I wanted to give you just some stats about how I see that money and how I see that of being valued not only to my position, but to the Cultural Commission and to our organizations here in Carson City. So on our end of things, in fiscal year 16-17, we only had 4 applications for arts and cultural events. 3 of those were funded. In fiscal year 17-18, we had 7 applications. 6 were funded. Last year, we had 11 applications. 9 were funded, and that's all with that same amount of $25,000 per year. In wanting to show this committee and redevelopment, in our community, really, the commitment to an ROI, I put together some grant guidelines that were not in use prior to me being here. So I'm going to pass that out for you, and I have some for the record. So in wanting to really get as much as we can, as much mileage as we can with that fixed amount of money for our multi-day events and sometimes year-round events, we put together eligibility. This language was not in use up until, well, May 14th, 2018. Eligibility, ineligibility, focusing on what we're going to fund, but actually how we're going to fund it as well. We actually put together some scoring criteria. And the scoring criteria basically made an applicant's score directly proportional to the money that they receive. This scoring criteria was used this year at our public meeting, and it seemed to turn out really well. And the applicants were really grateful that there was transparency and clarity to something that, that they could use going forward. It also just gives the procedures of special events. It gives a workflow. This is really just sort of a user-friendly introduction to how we use that $25,000 per year. And it also gives tips on how to get your event out, calendars, press releases, buy ads, LEDs. This is really a helping hand to all of our arts organizations, and it's my commitment in having this be a working document that I go back into and make better year by year with the community's input. So I'm joined here today by some representatives of our art community, and I want to make myself available should you have any questions about what we're doing with that money or anything to that effect.
Honestly, Mark, I think you're doing a great job, and I don't, it's $25,000 to whomever you decide to go, because we don't have any, our only objective is to grant you the $25,000 every year, and then you run with it.
And you've got just for clarity's sake, the commission runs with it. I don't vote.
Well, the commission runs with it, and it's up to you. It's up to you who gets part.
Well, I think I'm here tonight definitely, and my colleagues here, because this amount of money might not be a lot on the entire Excel spreadsheet, but it's a lot to what we do. And we want to show our gratitude and our commitment to it. I'm happy to have seen a lot of you at our events recently. I know that there are a lot of people who are dedicated to the arts on your commission, on your board here. And are there any other questions? If not, I'll step aside.
Just one question, Mark. If you do you fund the same event like multiple times, or I see you fund the same organization multiple times, but if someone did a performance like ballet or something, could they receive ongoing funding?
It's interesting that you mentioned that. Speaking directly to theater arts, there might be recurring themes, and I think for example, we always have a Santa every year. We always have a 4th of July every year. And I think there are some repeated efforts that might be, that we might see on stage here at the Community Center or the BAC. What I've also included for this, and this is just for arts and culture applicants, not for typical events applicants, is a final report. And that final report asks about 5 questions, 250 word max, asks for images, and asks how it's a final report that they're given for the first time. So it's hurdles I'm putting in front of the arts community, and they've been tolerant so far. But it's really about drawing data. So we can learn, so we can share that information with you. Like I said, this is a working document, and these are, as I see it, new efforts going forward.
Okay. I'm sorry, that last sentence kind of got my interest up. New events going forward. Are you answering his question by saying, generally we might fund somebody over again, but the direction of the Cultural Commission is to look for new things year in and year out?
Well, we wouldn't turn down a repeat applicant, just as this commission hasn't turned down repeat applicants for non-arts and culture events. Their content is up for scrutiny based upon our scoring criteria, and that'll be consistent year to year.
So you could, but you might not, is what you refund. The reason I asked
Sharon, can I put you on well, for an example, if Sharon was to propose this show again?
Yeah.
I don't think Sharon would in this room, but that would be an example of quality to growth to new additions in the community.
The reason I ask is that you're correct. This committee has in the past refunded events, but has continually said this is seed money. After the second or third year, you ought to, find someone. Is that not the way we've been moving? Yeah. So I just was curious. You guys, as Ronnie said, you get to do what you want to do.
Would that be considered seed money just for arts and cultural events or events in general?
That's events in general. And it went back to the time when both arts and other events were here, when I was covering it as a reporter. But we're not trying to tell you what to do. We're just trying to find out what direction you're headed since you brought it to us. Right. And I agree with that.
All of our applicants still fill out applications.
Yeah.
They don't get the a pass on that as other events do.
Well, that's always the case, yes, good. And I also want to add what Ronnie said, that you're doing a good job.
Thanks.
Cultural Commission included.
Excuse me, Mark, before you have a seat, just one question. So tell me, just for my clarity, what are we doing to build capacity with the schools here in Carson City, boys, with the arts and trying to align what your commission is doing, but how are we actually bringing them since they are our next wave of future artists coming up? So can you talk more about that, please?
Sure. There's a couple of examples I could give you. I'm happy to say that our cultural commission, there were 2 vacancies there, and we have the 2 youngest municipal cultural commissioners in the state of Nevada here in Carson City, a 19-year-old and a 24-year-old that the Board of Supervisors approved within the past month, maybe 5 or 6 weeks. That's definitely one way to reach the younger demographic. I personally don't think it's ever too early of a time to steward the next succession plan of leaders, of advocates for the arts, or really in any industry. This past weekend, we had an incredible successful celebration at the Nevada State Museum that the Cultural Commission partnered with, the Day of the Dead celebration. This was a Friday evening and a Saturday afternoon event, and I brought some community assets to the table there, KNVC, the Boys and Girls Club, the school district, K-12, and in walking through the crowd of maybe about 800 on Saturday, I was really curious to see where we were reaching the commuter, how it was. Was it through me going to Starbucks and posting those posters on the walls there? Was it on Facebook? The lion's share of people who were there got the information from, I'm going to probably pronounce it wrong, but Peachy's, the sheets that go home with the kids. Loads of parents there. So, and that was a new line in the water for us to do there at the museum. So I think that's a great indicator of just a large segment of our population, families and kids, bringing them into events like this. So I think that's, I can't speak it too deeply because I don't have any kids, but it's something I'd really like to learn more about.
Okay. Thanks, Mark. I think what you put together is very, very good.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to agenda item 4C.
I'm Eleanor Bugley. I am a commissioner on the Cultural Commission, and I'm also president of Carson City Symphony Association. So I don't actually get to give out the funds because that would be a conflict, but I'm very supportive of the $25,000 that helps the arts organizations, including the symphony. And in my travels, I've seen Carson City become known as a developing arts community, and that really attracts business as well as tourists and makes Carson City a wonderful place to live. So these are things that help our community. And it really takes a symbiotic relationship between the arts organizations, the businesses, and the government, the city government, to create this arts community that we love. So I wanted to talk about the symphony. We got our first grant this year, even though the organization is in its 35th year. And the money we get helps. It's leverage. We use that as match money for state funds and for corporate funds. It shows that the city thinks what we do is important. And we do a lot of things with youth, but the money that we get from this grant is not for our school programs because the schools are not in the redevelopment district. But we make our programs free for age 18 and under, and about half the people who attend our concerts attend free. So our concerts are ticketed, the symphony concerts, but half the people who attend are families of children in schools. They get a family ticket if they are in the music program. And all 18 and under are admitted free to everything we do. So I showed you a concert program from our October concert that was funded in part by this grant, which covered will cover four concerts. And then I gave you a list of future events with yellow highlights for the other three that are coming up. And I think that having the funding helps make it possible. It's not really seed money, but if the city feels that these events are good for the community, I hope that we can apply again in the future and continue to get this wonderful bonus that helps our program, which the full budget is over $60,000. So the little $3,000 is small. but in a way it's a seed for getting other funds for what we do. So thank you. Any question?
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Sharon Ross with Capital City Arts Initiative. We are in our 16th season here in Carson City presenting visual arts. We have three galleries. We use this room. We use the courthouse, and we use the community development building for student exhibitions. I want to thank you for the grant that we've received, the grants that we've received. They've been vital for CCAI. They help sustain us, and as Ellie said, they help leverage. They help leverage other public funding, private funding, and it's very important to have to show city support for these other grants that we apply for. And while the arts are a very different issue from public safety, fire protection, they're a healthy arts and culture community is just as vital to the citizens living here, I think. We make valuable contributions to the day-to-day life. Somebody mentioned the number of people served. Because we're in public buildings, we very conservatively say our exhibitions are available to 22,000 people that use the city's services. They're going in and out. They're available for people there that are using the city buildings. We do arts and education programs. We work with Carson High, Pioneer High, Douglas High, and Dayton High Schools, and Sierra Nevada College. And we take artists in for artist talks and workshops. This exhibition that we have in here, we just opened, Korea 76, is a collaboration by two artists, both from Las Vegas. Eugene Rolfe took the photographs when he was in Korea in the Air Force in 1976, and they were baking in his attic in Las Vegas. And his colleague and friend, Gig DePio, reprinted them, upgraded them, and then Gig is the painter, and he did paintings in response to the photographs. You can see more of Gig's paintings over at the courthouse. His exhibition will be up there through the end of January. And the essay that I handed out is about Gig's exhibition in the courthouse. All of CCI's artists receive honorarium, and our essay writer as well. The other exhibition we have going, we have exhibition of student work from Sierra Nevada College over in the Brick. Did I leave anything out? Oh, on Friday night. We had a fundraiser Friday night at the Adams Hub. Some of you were there. It was a great party. We had support from the Adams Hub and from Rise and from the union did the food, and they did a beautiful job with the food. We had a good time. So thank you. Next year, hopefully, you can all come. So any questions? City support's vital. Please keep going. Thank you.
Well, you have our support, $25,000 a year. So That's ongoing. According to this, you got it.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Any extra dollars you find lying around unused, please. I'm sorry, Ronnie. Yeah, we have to do the ask.
Yep, you're a good salesperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Leave it to you.
Good evening, everyone. I am Barbara DiNeo. I am the at-large commissioner on the Cultural Commission, and I want to add my thanks to all of you for understanding and knowing how important arts and culture are to this city. And I've seen, as the beginning of my second term, I've seen the change in the time that I've been on the commission. So I just want to add my thanks to. Appreciate it.
I'm going to hand out some paper. I'm David Buckley. I'm the president of the Mile High Jazz Band Association. I'm the leader of the Mile High Jazz Band. On the side, I'm also the conductor of the Carson City Symphony. We do an event, we've been doing it for 15 years. It's called Jazz and Beyond. It's going under different names, but in the last number of years, we've been getting the special events funding, and we want to thank the city for that. It's really important. We have a budget for the Mile High Jazz Band Association, which supports the band, does some workshops with kids. This is outside of the Jazz and Beyond. But we have a budget, I think, of about $40,000 for the Mile High Jazz Band, of which we spend about $28,000 to put on Jazz and Beyond. It's sort of the tail that's wagging the dog. We started in 2004. It started out to be just a little celebration of Count Basie's 100th birthday, and it's grown since then to the point now that we have about 100 musicians performing. We have over 50 events. If you take a look at these programs and you take a look at the index page and you see all the events, there are about 36 events that are highlighted. Those are the ones that we directly fund. We ask other groups to celebrate this 17-day period we have. Last year we did it, this past August we did it from August 3rd through the 19th. And we're planning to do it in 2019 from August 9th through the 25th. It tends to grow. We have a lot of musicians from Reno who are envious of what we have here in terms of an outlet for jazz and for other music. And we've expanded this to be not just about jazz, but it's also about film. We've been sort of helping. I want to take a little bit of credit for helping be the incubator for some of the things that the Jukebox International Film Festival has done. They're in their second year. We've been there to support them in getting their 501c3 status. We, through this Jazz and Beyond, we present a lot of family-friendly entertainment. We feel it's a very important value to the community. We think it is also good for the economic benefit to the city. I haven't gone through all the numbers, but the last 2-3 years, I've taken the attendance that we have for our main events and plugged it into a calculator from the Americans for the Arts, and it's showing a benefit to the community. I think it's about $80,000 or $100,000. In terms of the multiplier, people coming in, using restaurants, going to casinos, maybe Mr. Cardinale would back me up on that, doing other things. And I think it also adds a certain vibe to the community. If you're an employer, you want an active community. Where am I in my notes here? Okay. We use a lot of volunteer planning. There's no paid staff. We do pay our sound engineer, and he has thousands of dollars worth of value, and he goes around and gives the money back to us. It's just so that helps to show up on our budget. We are very fortunate to be working with that fellow. And we use a lot of the facilities around the city, helping people get familiar with them. For example, the Silver Saddle Ranch. We've been doing events down in there since that's been turned over to the city. We use the Capitol Amphitheater, which is state, and with Legislative Plaza. We present lectures. We have concerts. We've used McFadden Plaza. We use Comic Courtyard. The Carson Wall has partnered with us. Silver Oak Golf had a 19th hole event this year with us. Bliss Mansion. We've sort of partnered with the Brewery Arts Center all along. Couple of years we were kind of not talking to each other because of certain reasons. No, just a little bit. But we're now really working with them, and they're doing the Levitt Amp concert series. And, you know, people show up for that. I can't take credit for that being part of us. But we do list it in here, and people see that and say, they pick up one of these things, or they pick up a little postcard flyer, and they say, wow, all this is happening in Carson City. Isn't that great? We mentioned the working with Jukebox International Film Festival, trying to get that off the ground. The Nevada Commission on Tourism is happy to help us fund, and we do advertising outside of our area. So we'll be advertising in the Sacramento area. We'll be in parts to the east of Carson City. The special events funds help us with the 17-day festival with 50 events, and it really helps us to free up our budget that for the other things that the Mile High Jazz Band does, including jazz workshops with kids at the high school and the middle school, mostly middle school. And I know some of you have been in education, and you know how that important it is. And we did last year, we did a really special workshop and jazz camp that involved the a New Orleans band from the Navy band. So we're really happy to do that. And I just would like to urge you to continue giving funding for these special events. It's part of what makes, I think, our city vital. And I think that's all I have to say about that. Oh, we also work with the Wine Walk, the Downtown Business Association. We persuade them each year to fund musicians for groups to perform on the first Saturday in August Wine Walk. And that's good. So we do a lot of collaboration with a lot of different people. And I think your money is a good multiplier. And the arts in general are a good multiplier for the vitality of the city. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rounding out tonight's filibuster online, item 7. I would kindly ask the commission, in reviewing your current 5-year plan, to kindly consider an additional $5,000 to next fiscal year. This past fiscal year, I mentioned we have the most applicants and the most awardees. The current amount was actually $32,200 because Lee and I were able to identify some unspent monies that were rolled forward. So the actual amount that we dispersed last year was $32,200. Thank you for your consideration.
Thanks, Mark. Okay, so now moving forward to 4C. For possible action to take a recommendation to the Redevelopment Authority to make amendments to the resolution number 2017-RA-R1 and 2017-R1 to modify the Redevelopment Facade Improvement Program guidelines. The can of worms we opened up last time.
Yeah, certainly led to a lot of discussion, but that's okay. We're coming back and going to make some recommendations tonight to make clarifications, and if changes to the policies and guidelines are necessary, those will make some recommendations tonight to the Redevelopment Authority regarding those. So my presentation here is going to follow the staff report, basically, and I think I'll summarize them here, and then I think the best thing to do, or what I'd like to do is to go through these in order and tackle these in this particular order here. I think it'll be helpful. I think these early decisions will be helpful with the later decisions. So out of the discussions we had, I think the key issues that were raised were these four, plus the fifth one on here is any other recommendations you may have. But these four are, one, on eligible properties. And really, I think the question for your recommendation and to decide is, should the program continue to be all commercial properties within the redevelopment district, or is it time to narrow that down somewhat? Number two, we have ineligible properties. There was certainly an open interpretation for debate on that. Properties receiving tax incentive, I think it is, with the city. So I think one way or another, we want to put it in here that these historic property tax deferment or open space tax deferment, as they're called, is either a disqualifying event or not. And we can make that recommendation and write it in there accordingly. Eligible improvements, there was a lot of discussion on painting, so we'll discuss that section and whether or not and under what circumstances painting might be eligible. And then there was also some discussion about the level of discretionary review that the RAC has in reviewing and approving or denying an application. So I'd like to finish up the discussion with that and then go on to other related guidelines. And so I think, is it okay with the chair to want to take these one at a time for discussion as I've gone here? Okay.
That'd be great.
Okay, moving on to the first issue is eligible property. So as I said, the current guidelines say all commercial properties within the redevelopment district are eligible. So as in your packet, I have the maps of the redevelopment area, and the red shaded areas up there are the property areas that are zoned commercial that would contain commercial uses. So this first map here is from Stewart Street to the south. It's basically the Carson Street commercial corridor. The redevelopment area does include residential areas, but the red shaded areas are commercial. And really on the south Carson Street, I think if you really look at these properties, I think they're long and there's some jogs in there, but for the most part they all really are on Carson Street, and some of them on Curry Street there. And then looking at the downtown, so the one on the left is the commercial properties as applied now. So we have the redevelopment districts in the dark red outline over the whole thing, and the red shaded area are all commercial properties. And that's not true. That's not all the commercial properties, but it is areas with commercial zoning because, as I point out in the staff report in here, the properties basically from Nevada Street to the west and on the other side, on the east side from North Valley Street to the east, are either residential office or general office, which are a mix of both residential and commercial uses. And actually, there's a lot of residential uses there. And that was one of those areas. The residential office area was the area that the last applicant was in that led to this discussion. So one of the alternatives that's proposed for you to consider and this right map shows, is showing the commercial areas but excluding those residential office and general office areas that are significantly residential now. Again, so we can refer back to that map if you like, but I'll put the options as they are in there or other options as you may discuss and come up with. But you can continue with all commercial properties being eligible, limited as suggested on that map there to exclude the residential office and general office areas, or come up with some other criteria that is narrower or, as the case may be, broader on that. So I'll stop there, and maybe I think we can come to a consensus on this. Maybe amongst the commission, then we can move on from there.
Okay, that sounds good.
I have a question, Lee. I think initially we all thought this was going to be mostly for facade improvement on Main Street to go with everything that was going on Carson Street, our Main Street, okay? When you sent out notices about the funding available for facade improvement. Did it reach out as deep into those areas as you were just discussing?
So I have not sent notices out.
No, I meant previously when we first started the program.
Yeah.
So everybody within that area received this letter saying, including the gentleman that we had last time, that you are eligible to receive these fundings, because somehow or other I thought it was primarily those on Carson Street and Curry Street.
No, to this point, we have never sent notices out to all the property owners that are eligible, either in the downtown or other areas. And so far that's been because we haven't needed to up to this point. We've had applications come in that have, especially the first 2 years, had the applications came in that came up to the limit, so there wasn't additional funding. I think I mentioned last time, because we have available funding this year that needs to be used, I do want to send notices out, target. But now, pending this discussion, I don't want to go out and send notices out beyond what the program might end up being in a couple months from now.
I personally think that was what, you know, had us stumbling the last time, is, again, the perception that it was just a certain area, the one that you could see, because we had big discussion over whether we're going to put a roof on or whatever. If you couldn't see it from Curry Street, I mean, it was all seemed to be within that and never as far as Mountain Street or any of those streets.
It's never been as far as Mountain Street. Maybe there's a couple properties, residential office in there, but again, it was only commercial properties. And I understand there was a lot of discussion, but I forget where it was left with the RAC and the original adoption, but I remember there being a lot of discussion, at least at the Redevelopment Authority, if not here, about fairness and opening it up to more property owners. So it was certainly adopted that for all commercial property owners and not just the corridor. That being said, that doesn't mean that's what it has to be going forward.
And Lee, I think that may have been part of what the confusion was, because I think it probably did happen on their side, because I can remember from the beginning when this first came up, we were asking questions, can you see it, not even from Curry, but from Carson Street? Because is it something you can see that is all about the corridor going down there through the center? And so I don't believe in, at least in my mind, and when I heard everybody else, that my belief was in other people's minds too, it was just in that corridor. So I think that's where everything started to get kind of funny last time.
I was going to say that the map that you had up of the redevelopment area as it was originally planned, that was accepted, and those properties within there were all part of this plan, this major plan. So I kind of feel that if we narrow it, then we do limit the accessibility to everybody to be fair and equal in this process. And that's how I feel.
Okay. I think that can also come up under your fourth agenda item when there's discretion on where you're going to go with it, too. And I think that's what we had problems with last time, going by the letter of the law and what was happening versus what the intention was in the beginning, which is, I think, what...
Yeah, so it might help to jump ahead a little bit and just talk a little bit about this discretionary part of it. So my strong recommendation with this is if you want to limit it to the corridors that are Carson Street, write those in the standards and limit it to Carson Street. Don't say it's all commercial properties and then decide that you don't, when the application comes in, that you don't want it to be the properties that aren't on Carson Street. I mean, it's certainly that's better to present to the public. I mean, that's easier for us to say, no, you qualify for sure. Here it is. There's still money available, and they can come forward. And there's nothing wrong with limiting it if that's what you want to do. But in terms of making it, when a governing body makes a discretionary decision, it's based on findings. I used a Planning Commission decision in here. So you have to make a and even that can be a somewhat subjective decision, but you have to make findings saying that it doesn't have impacts on the neighborhood and those sort of things. And so I think kind of where I'm going to go with that is be careful what you ask for if you want that weight of making those discretionary decisions. I hope through this process we can come and talk it through to what to identify the criteria that there's going to be a recommendation and a action by the Redevelopment Authority on. And if that's limited, so be it. But let's I hope we get to where we express the criteria rather than making a subjective decision on each application.
I agree. I think it's a slippery slope if you go down the other direction.
Yeah, and with your indulgence, Mr. Chair, I just want to kind of weigh in a little bit on what Committee Member Powell and then also what Lee just said. So if we're talking about fairness here in the procedure, we really do want to tread carefully, because what we don't want to have is to wind up with a resolution with unfettered discretion, right, for the committee in making these types of decisions. And really what we're talking about is with the legal standard of equal protection. We don't want to have it, you know, completely flexible where there are no standards. And so, I mean, I'm going to use a very extreme example here. If somebody were to come before this body as an applicant, you know, with a project and a review, and this body were to say, well, we just don't like you, or we don't like the way you presented this, or we don't like the tone of your speech. I mean, that's the sort of discretion we, you know, certainly want to stay away from. So that being an extreme example, of course, we want to make sure that we provide some sort of guideposts, you know, within the resolution. It doesn't have to be specific, but it does have to provide some type of a guideline. This way, when an applicant presents material, he or she understands, well, what are, you know, the guiding posts here that I need to stay within, and I don't want to stray outside of these lanes. The discretionary part of it can come later on in the resolution, where depending on whether you initially meet the first set of criteria, you know, ultimate decision-making authority can be vested with this body with the discretion in terms of, well, we're going to look at the overall scope of this project, and based on whether this, you know, contributes to, you know, the characteristics and the intent and purpose of this resolution in the first place, you know, that's something that can be explored. But so just to kind of weigh in on what Lee was saying earlier.
Thank you. So just to give my two cents, this whole project started in the beginning because it was all about improving the downtown business development or the downtown quarter of Carson City. It didn't happen in the first place going back 2, 3, 4 streets. It wasn't for people's homes or parks or various other things. It was to help increase business by improving the facade so it didn't look horrible like a dilapidated area in downtown Carson City. So if the way I'm looking at it right through those eyes. So for my two cents is, it's businesses in the downtown corridor that are going to attract people and business and money to downtown Carson City. It's not about helping Bob with his paint or his roof 3 blocks away. So that's where I stand.
So, money, just to add to that, Mr. Chair, it was started to, because the city was putting an investment in the downtown, and it was an encouragement for property owners to make a similar investment to those properties. Just a different way of saying what you said, but that was part of the discussion for sure.
Question? It doesn't matter to me how it's written, and I, again, get two bites at this apple, so I'll try and keep my mouth shut at this juncture. But I do want to know, when you say the corridor, are you just talking about Carson Street, or are you going over to Curry on one side and
Stewart?
Yeah, well, it would be Stewart. If it wouldn't be much sense not to go over to Stewart, but then that raises the question of would it go to Nevada, you know. So I didn't quite understand what you were saying there.
I think I have an easy answer. Anywhere that we have been doing city work to improve our downtown corridor is where it would be, is where I would identify it. Everything that we have seen and put all of our money, we've been improving signages and bike racks and anything where we have improved, I think that, in my mind, can be an easy definition of the corridor.
Yeah, and could, I'm going to question a little bit too, just to get some, nail it down. What about, would that include streets that are planned to be improved, like South Carson Street and William Street?
I think that's something to be taken up when we see that start happening, not at this point.
And that's in the redevelopment district anyway. You know, I don't know how True. Far you're going to go with William Street, but that's in redevelopment. So I'm thinking that the businesses along those streets, so you can't just narrow it to Carson Street, but those that are seen. And, you know, I don't remember, you know, please help me, who actually wrote these. I thought they came out of the Board of Supervisors initially, and then we just went through it, and the whole funding was for that particular reason. So I don't know what you're meaning here about commercial properties versus residential office. That was, I think, the issue last time. It wasn't so much a commercial property that we heard from. I don't think it was a painting issue because there was lots of painting that was done on Carson Street. So that was not the issue. So you had mentioned about residential office maybe not being eligible or being eligible, whatever. So I think the decision here is what does commercial mean versus, because most of the commercial properties are up to Nevada Street. And then it becomes more residential office after that.
That's right. In fact, on the map on the right up there, the line with the arrow coming down the exclusive property, basically that properties on Nevada Street are not downtown commercial zoning. They're the residential office. Properties on both sides of Curry Street are downtown commercial. As the zoning line goes, that's where the zoning line is.
So I think the bottom line is where do we want to make it? We've got $50,000. That doesn't go very far, and especially if you're going to South Carson Street. And there is a lot of businesses down there who certainly could use a lot of help.
I mean, I'd be supportive of Jeff Cardinal's proposal. I mean, I think that's how I envision the program as well. And it just, as redevelopment changes, the city's priorities changes, then that facade improvement could be refocused. But that's how I would see it as well. So your definition is I'm happy with that.
I think, and as our DA stated, it gives clear lines, and the water doesn't get as muddy. I mean, anything that the city has touched to improve that is right there and being affected is something that can be eligible. I think it was always a commercial-type program because we weren't out there to help a family house. We were out there to increase profitability in business and commerce and traffic in downtown.
And we need the visibility. So I think, that's where we're getting the people passing through the town. So and that's what we're trying to draw them with by our investment in the streetscapes.
And if you want to follow the cursor on the right-hand map there, so the current limits of the downtown project in relation to this redevelopment area here is where my cursor there is on Fifth Street. So that's the southern boundary of the project, and it goes up almost to the north end of the downtown redevelopment boundary, and then does come over to Curry Street through the core there. So in terms of lengthwise, it's most of this downtown redevelopment district going from north to south.
Can I go ahead and ask these residential offices that we have that are being worked on and taken care of by these businesses, why wouldn't we consider them as commercial? I understand it's because of the structure of the building, but it's still a business. And if they wouldn't have developed those buildings or redeveloped those buildings themselves, those buildings would have fallen into disrepair.
So I think that's the issue to resolve now, because we do, if there's a commercial use and it's not a residential, so the resident, I was talking about the zoning, there's residential office zoning, that area does contain properties that are commercial. It's a small C generic term, so anything that's in the assessor's data file that there's commercial uses on it by whatever percentage they're doing, that would be the eligible portion of the property today. And so, but if there's a residential use there, then that would be ineligible.
Can I follow up on that? I'm kind of curious. Does any commercial entity in the redevelopment district get the tax out of that? In other words, are they putting in, and was that the reason that it was written commercial in the district?
So I think, I'm not sure I understood the question, but I think the reason it was written commercial was to make it broader. To make it open to more property owners within the district is the Redevelopment Authority Board of Supervisors discussion that I recall about.
Let me rephrase the question. What I'm asking is, are all of these businesses paying in to the pot that this $50,000 is coming out of?
Oh, well, yeah, all the properties that we're talking about are contributing to redevelopment through the property tax.
Thank you. I do want to say a word for both Dan and Lise, telling us to be specific. I mean, I think if we're going to make a recommendation, we need to make it really clear. And I don't quite understand what you mean, Court, by where we've done work, because in the future we'll probably do more work. But it's too vague for me at this point.
I would say anyone that currently applies for this, their area where they're applying has to have work or had work done. I think it's a rolling thing moving forward. So if I have a commercial piece of property where nothing's been touched, say south of Fifth Street, and nothing isn't going to be touched south of Fifth Street for another year, I don't think at this point I should be eligible to get into that $25,000. Now, once we start approving things as a city to start making work, I think it should coincide with what's going along with the city, so we're not getting ahead of ourselves. We could be, in my eyes, we could be allowing people to improve something where it may take 4 more years for the city to actually improve that area. And I'm just trying to make it clear as asked, and I think it puts an easy definition on it. If it's already been improved or it's currently slated for improvement and moving forward, then that's eligible. If it's not, we have to wait until the city's moving forward in that area to improve it.
And when it comes to mapping, I'm assuming you're talking about what's referred to something like the Downtown Streetscape Enhancement Project, specifically that project in that area, which is the one project that's been completed to date. Is that what you're referring to right now?
Yeah, okay. And the Curry one, which is taking forever.
Actually, they split it up for 2 years, but it was all part of the same project.
And I think anyone along those lines should absolutely be eligible for that.
Potentially the next one, the William Street Corridor project. So these, I mean, I think that's what I'm envisioning as. So we've got a defined project, redevelopment project with streets and yeah.
It's moving forward.
Well, and that's why I'm asking these questions, because we got the downtown that goes to 5th, and then we have on down to where Stewart and Carson meet, and then we have the Tiger Grant. And so each one of those would have to be incorporated as a plan of expenditure for the overall projects, includes what we did in downtown, what we're going to do on the south, then William, and finally north eventually. But each of those, in terms of the names of the projects, will probably have a different name, though it's all part of the quarter cent sales tax that we're using for it. Well, that's why I'm asking these questions, because I think we have to have somebody help us with the language that makes it clear as it rolls forward.
So I just like to ask you a clarifying question, and maybe there's something that, you know, Lee and I can draft around, but I want to make sure that we have this clearly established on the record. So when we're talking about improvements, you know, to these areas, and Lee and I were just discussing this as a sidebar. We can come up with maps for it, but are we talking about aesthetic improvements only? Or so, you know, example that I have in my head is, you know, what if you're within the downtown area, so to speak, you know, outside of the main corridor, but, you know, there's an area where, let's say there was a sewer line break, you know, and Public Works had to go in there to trench. I mean, would that constitute a quote-unquote improvement here in the eyes of the committee where, you know, you would be eligible for facade improvement?
In my eyes, that doesn't constitute a facade. that's structural?
I think maybe to clarify a little bit, we should go on to number two to answer number one, which is ineligible properties already receiving tax incentives, because that was a big deal last time. So I think that really makes a big difference to answering number one.
Yeah, okay, let me, just a quick update on this item. So the guidelines say that ineligible properties include properties already receiving tax incentives or other financial incentives from the city. I mean, we determine, we all agree that that certainly includes the sales tax reimbursement agreements, the auto dealer agreements, and what we want is to come up with verbiage in here and say whether or not it includes these historic property tax deferments. So I didn't conclude this in the staff report, but I wanted to put it up here. Here's a little screenshot of, with Carson Street being the blue vertical line there, and from about William Street and Musser Street are labeled there, just to give you some context. Again, the historic district, so what properties are we talking about that might be receiving historic tax deferments? It's properties within these areas. It's that the vast majority of which are to the west. They're in that residential office area or to the west. The exceptions are some of these on here, like the museum, the Laxalt building, the Capitol building down at the south there. So, and we actually, the St. Charles Hotel is one of those that's an individual property that's included, that we didn't have this discussion when that facade improvement went through, but so there's only a handful of historic buildings actually on Carson Street or Curry Street, and the vast majority of them are the residential office. So, and I would say that it's only the true historic properties within the residential office area that even have the tax deferment, because they have to qualify. So it's not really all those properties. It's just some of them. A relatively small number. There's a good number of them, but in the relatively few.
I guess we're only making recommendations. This is, again, for the Board of Supervisors to Redevelopment Authority to really talk about. So I don't know if we have a consensus or not, but I'm not sure if we are going to have one, because we've seen lots of different
positions. Yeah, and the point of my showing this is actually second, because if you're not going to allow the residential office properties, you're taking a large... That's where the historic tax deferment properties are. They're in that residential office area to the west.
Would we like to have any? I know, Sherry, you had thoughts on that. Does anyone else have thoughts on the residential office versus commercial?
Yeah, I'll jump in here because I was fairly vociferous last meeting of this commission and during the Board of Supervisors, that I did not believe the word incentive had anything to do with the tax deferment situation. But I was just going for what was before us. What we do going forward, it doesn't matter to me. I still don't think it's an incentive, but if we want to cut them out, then I think it is a footprint way to do it. But we probably should make it clear what kind of incentive we're talking about.
What was the board's recommendation?
Well, I don't think the board made a recommendation. The board gave him the paint money, but we all had the discussion. And as I said to my colleague who sits right there, Lori Bagwell, I said, well, in the past you did the roof and then you took it away. And if you want to take this one away, take it away too. But, you know, as things sit the way it's written now, I don't see that we have any choice. But, you know, so as I say, just let's be clear and say what we'd like, and then the board will be clear coming back, I assume. But they were just having a single issue before them. Is that not correct, Lee?
Well, we had turned down some properties initially, if you all recall. for other reasons. It was an apartment building or whatever, which is considered commercial as well. So I think the bottom line here is, and we can discuss it till the cows come home, although we don't have many cows in Carson City. But I think that the definitions initially were a little bit too broad. And I think most of us at the time thought for sure in 2016 when this came through that this was to be a Main Street improvement program, facade improvement program. So if that is not the case, then I think the direction has to come back and say, this is the way it is. I mean, it was done by the Board of Supervisors initially. So if we get the verbiage from them as to what we are doing, we have some guidelines. The guidelines were too broad, I believe. So, or we thought they were something different than what they were.
I agree, Ryan. I think you had missed that meeting. You were gone. The last nightmare one. Yeah. Anyway, one of the things that we were told, especially from our DA, is moving forward, I agree with you 100%. I think they were extremely vague in the beginning, and that's why we're all having this discussion, and they're having this discussion going down the road. But instead of us to go back to them and tell us what you think again, and then we'll come back and tell you what we think again, I think what we should do today as the recommending committee is tell them where we feel it should be, and then they can say, I think you guys are right on point, or I think you're off your rocker. So I think today it's up to us to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors based on our own internal thoughts and knowledge regarding this entire project and regarding this specific line item to move forward. And then they can say yay or nay. I think it's up to us to decide where we want to go.
I'm in agreement with that, and I wanted to say that I think continuing the program for all the commercial properties within the district and then creating guidelines around that and not trying to cut out people that are already in that map that have already been approved and know they've been approved to be in the redevelopment district, I think that's where we'd catch some heat from people.
I just want to comment on, I mean, the fairness, I mean, I'm a property owner, I'm a residential office property owner, I pay the redevelopment tax, but I'm not paying extra. I'm just paying, it's just being earmarked aside, so that's the part of fairness. I'm not sure that I don't feel aggrieved by not being eligible, and that's why I don't, some of these corners of the redevelopment district, I think it is the core that we should be focusing on, because it's the core is, if that's rotten, then that's where we have the problem that's really visible. And these other ones, my house and corner somewhere, it's not quite as visible. It doesn't get nearly the traffic these other houses do, and I don't think that they really, out of fairness, need to have this improvement program.
I understand where that's coming from, but I also understand the blue line, and when you're walking through the neighborhoods and you're trying to bring tourism and you come across a house, let's say, for example, the one right next to Bliss Mansion. What is going on with that house, right? Well, I would love if it was a commercial property, if they had some business going on in there, if they were doing some type of business. Not saying that's because it's a residential it deserves, but if they were doing business in there, like right across the street where they have the acupuncture and everybody that actually is taking care of the building, it's an incentive to take care of the building and to have businesses down there. Plus, it helps contribute to people walking around or tourism. It helps contribute to the blue line. Gets people getting out and about in Carson.
Well, I think at that point, the blue line could be a discussion, but it goes past the blue line, and then if you have someone past that blue line that gets authorized for something, and then someone right downtown on the street that comes in 3 months later and wants to do something, then you've got a shiny penny four blocks away over here that was in the redevelopment area that was okay and authorized, and you have one right downtown that wasn't able to do it. So, Daniel, I think you wanted to say something.
Thanks. I just wanted to, again, to establish, for clarity purposes, there was a question earlier on the record about, whether the Board of Supervisors have made a recommendation with respect to their interpretation of, what constitutes and does not constitute a tax incentive. I think the answer that was discussed on the record was that there was no such recommendation per se. I do want to clarify for the record, though, that, the Board obviously made a decision on the appeal in granting the appeal, in allowing the applicant to move forward with eligibility. So, I mean, even though there wasn't a quote-unquote recommendation per se, I mean, the board's finding was such that their interpretation was that the historic district tax deferral did not constitute a tax incentive for purposes of eligibility. I'm not saying that to have that persuade this body, because as the chair pointed out earlier, one of the items that this body is tasked with tonight is to come up with its own recommendation and move forward to present to the Board of Supervisors, but I did want to clarify that for the record.
Nobody else has anything at the moment. I have something I'd like to throw out for consideration, and if someone wants to work on a, you know, summarize it, and then we can move it forward with a motion. But I go back to bullet point number 3, only allow applications for properties fronting Curry Street or includes other streets such as, Carson Street, or includes other streets such as Curry Street, or something to be defined of, as I had mentioned earlier, currently under redevelopment or has been signed off for redevelopment, and as we move forward, that same thing happens. And I would also exclude the areas that have not currently been under redevelopment or are not there yet, but leave them open to having the people be able to come forward and request the funds at that point. But I think it needs to be something that is directly connected with how this whole thing started in its infancy, which was the downtown, specific downtown corridor, the re-beautification. It's a facade improvement. We use the word facade at the front of a home or a house or a business to make it look nice. It's curb appeal at that point. It's not plumbing and things of that nature and structural. It's a facade improvement to help bring commerce and people and business and individuals and tourists to our area. So that's kind of the general underlying summary I have.
I just wanted to remind the committee that we did approve the Greenhouse Garden Center's facade improvement, not currently in redevelopment, the street, not that area. And part of the reason that we did approve that was because they did have water damage during the flooding.
The can of worms doesn't seem to go away.
I think major thing that's missing here is perhaps, and this may be zeroing in on it, if they collect sales tax. And the greenhouse did correct sales tax. So that is a commercial business that not only, you know, that gives beyond the redevelopment funds, and it gives back to the state and gives back to the city. So just throwing that in.
And I'd add, too, that when we did agree to do that, we were still under some extremely muddy conditions with what we were told, and we didn't have what we were under the impression of versus what's come to light through our last applicant.
And I mean, that's what we've done in the past. I think that's what we're looking for. What we want to do in the future is what we care about. And so we wouldn't, maybe going forward, we wouldn't fund Greenhouse Garden Center under this, and that's explicit. That's what we're saying. So just because we've done things, I think stating like the Carson and Curry, and then having it right now is probably the clear way to do it. And then if we have an agenda item for further recommendations of the facade improvement program, and we have the Williams project actually started, then we say our recommendation is that we extend it to Williams Street and stop Carson Street perhaps at that point. You know, those things could happen as well. But maybe the Carson Curry, that's clear in my mind.
Why not Stewart? It's just one block back.
Are we currently doing work on?
No.
Well, that's where I'm trying to find a clear definition. Maybe I look to you, John, for that, is what is currently happening? Because, again, it's a slippery slope. Why not? I agree with you. Why not Stewart? It's one block back. Then why not Root? Because it's one block back. And it's popular, too. So where do we keep stopping going backwards? So I'm just trying to find the lines. I'm not saying mine are right. I just want us to get some more clear definitions so we don't run into the issue.
And that's what I'm encouraging, is that we get clarity. And yet I was in that business until 2 years ago. I don't write things now. But, you know, I think I'm not sure we can write it here so that, but we can give clear direction to them to write it clearly. That's the only idea I would have. I hesitate to get involved in saying, yeah, this footprint, that footprint. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have any quarrel with your general statement, but I wasn't clear about what you were saying.
Okay.
And I think it may provide opportunities for us to fall into another hole as the projects come rolling out. So that's why I want to be as clear as we can be.
Lee, I think we're going to look to you here for something, maybe. And I think the majority, or at least there is some consensus up here that we try and define this geographically. Now, by me saying Fifth Street or this street or that street isn't necessarily, I think, the appropriate thing today, because I don't think we're the ones that should be defining that. I think if we could get maybe back from you a clear definition, like the map to be adjusted to where this is currently what we are doing completely under redevelopment, because the, you know, we said Carson Street and Curry, and it says, well, why not Stewart on the other side? Because nothing's going on Stewart that side, or why not Roop? So if we have a clear map from you on what is currently under the approved downtown beautification project, and then what's coming up, and then we can move forward each time we go, I think that gives us a clear definition of saying these are the areas, it's commercial areas or tax-paying businesses within these areas that we can look at having come before us in the future for approval. Does that, and we, if you want, we can do a motion of some sort to that effect.
Well, I do, if you, are you willing, yeah, do you want, I kind of heard in there you want me to come back for a decision later, or?
Not necessarily for a decision, but to define the actual territory and parameters. Instead of us sitting here with a map arbitrarily as members of the committee saying, okay, we're going to say Fifth to Curry to this, to, you know, I don't think that's, I think that's a little over our, unless you disagree. I'm just yielding to you and saying, you know, maybe if there's something defined, and I don't know the answer to this, if there's something defined that has already been approved by the city that says these are the delineations of where we are currently doing or approving or continuing or planning on doing the beautification structure and construction in the future.
Can I ask a quick question? Sorry. I'm curious about, is Carson Street considered done or is it not considered done? Is it still under redevelopment or development? Because if it's considered done, then would we be excluding people that are applicants from Carson Street if it is done?
In my version, you don't take it away from something that's already been done, because they may have to play catch-up, which is my point on the one that was way away, too. If the guy can't afford it at the time, hey, he's trying, but it might take another 6 months or a year for him to get there. But I think anything that is currently being done, has been done, should be eligible. And I think as we move forward, everywhere that as you plop next and next, then they're eligible, and then I think they should stay eligible as long as the program continues.
Okay, is that those things that were in the plan of expenditure that envisioned outside of the animal shelter and the MAC, redoing the downtown, both Carson and Curry, and then redoing, we were originally going to do William, but it traded off to South because the state had $5 million that they gave us and we had about $1 million in the bank. And then we got the Tiger Grant for the in-between. So what, anything that's in that former plan of expenditure is what you're talking about going forward for beautification?
Sure.
So, Mr. Chair, you asked me if there's defined. I mean, the projects are very well defined in their scope, and I quickly and roughly drew in the scope of where the downtown project is, and including the basically all the properties and buildings that front on the street or within the polygon up there from Fifth Street going up Carson Street, and including just this portion of Curry Street here. It goes up to William Street right there, back out a little bit to see. So that's the limit of the area where the city has put in the a static investment, including the side streets in between there.
And I think it's pretty easy if we just use the verbiage in the motion to include all prior approved city. And John, or you can tell me whatever the specific name is of our improvement projects. If we just put that in the language, then I think that clearly it draws the lines itself.
I can't remember the exact name, but I'm sure we have.
Oh, we have them. Yeah. And you were talking about the properties fronting on those street improvements.
I'm talking properties fronting on the areas that have been approved by the city under whatever designated name it is currently, and then passed, and then as we move forward, as those projects get approved, the people within that area will be able to come before the board and have their projects considered.
Yeah, it makes sense to me. And I say, as I was saying, if there's a new project, then we can decide whether we want to include that in the facade improvement as another recommendation redevelopment for it, not that we have to say someone can apply and or then we'll consider it. That's like another extension. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, I'm also interested in honing this word commercial on commercial property. I think if we're going to cut areas outside of that out, do we want to go as far as Ronnie was talking about, saying, well, you're eligible if you collect sales tax, but you're not eligible, which would then take out a lot of office things if they happen to be one in there. I don't know. I'm, again, just trying to find a way to write this because I'll then have to turn around and decide later whether I'm going to support it or not. But I want it to be written. I'm like you. I want it to be written clearly whether I agree with it or not, so that when it comes to the board.
So the issue of commercial properties is almost moot when you narrow it down to the commercial corridors, because they're all commercial zoning.
How many residential offices are right on?
There might be some properties that include some residential with it, so it's probably worth still, or maybe then, it's non-residential is the new term, not commercial. Non-residential is probably actually a better term.
Then maybe that's, but again, maybe that's not an issue, because again, I think the vision of doing this in the first place was to beautify a certain area of our community. So if I say, because I don't like the fact you're doing taxidermy and you're not, and we're going to say no and yes, the whole point was walk down the corridor, beautify the area. If it's someone's personal home, I don't think that should apply. I think it becomes a lot easier with the family or with a residential slash commercial if they fall within that, and you've eliminated 95% of those scenarios by narrowing the field in the first place.
I think you guys actually had one like that. That was before you. It was off the corridor. Ellen. Ellen's property, which was both commercial and apartment or something, wasn't
That's
it?
That's before we narrowed.
Right.
Are you asking for just a single motion, just this point one, then?
So I think it would be beneficial to the recommendation of the board to do separate motions on this, because you may have unanimous agreement on others, but not on this topic.
I'll give it a try.
and you're not required to provide specific language, by the way, on the motion, so you don't have to try to struggle with that. I mean, I think we've got a consensus idea of what the recommendation is.
I move
is.
What he says.
Okay.
Okay, so I move that we recommend to the Redevelopment Authority that option C, that the properties within a specific area of redevelopment district, including Carson Street from William to Fifth and Curry Street in the current streetscape improvement area, are eligible for facade improvement.
All or only within the redevelopment, the street project construction?
Within area. The street, yeah, street construction area. I'll let you put that in 16th in the minutes.
I don't mean to keep going, but I just have a question. So then we would still be able to see any application, though, that would be presented to us, whether or not they fall within. Because what if the Chevron station that's there on the corner of Williams and Carson was bought by somebody and they applied? We would not include them then?
Well, I'll strike my William to Fifth.
No streets.
No streets, just the, yeah, we're just talking, okay, let me rephrase the motion. How am I do that?
But it is, just to clarify the motion, maybe that'll just work, just for, you're talking about properties that front on the streets that have had the project improvements.
That's what I meant, yes. Do I have a second?
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
So, again, with that first limitation, I think you've really eliminated properties. You've had the St. Charles Hotel property was one that already received it, so they're not gonna be back in for the program. Most of the Jack's Bar is another one that is a historic property on Carson Street and within the project area. I think there's a couple others, but most of them are state properties.
And as we found out,
we do need an action on this one, though, because we do want to clarify it for the guidelines.
And I'd like to remind the committee that the supervisors did overturn our motion on that, correct? When it came up last time.
You voted 3-3, but yeah, it resulting in a denial. So they overturned it and approved.
Yeah, go ahead, Diane. No.
Ask about Jack's Bar. Are they receiving incentives?
No.
They're eligible.
And I want to let this commission know that because I wear two hats, when this comes before the Board of Supervisors, although I did not oppose this, I don't know whether I'll favor it or won't favor it. When we get there, depending on what kind of thing we overall cobble together. Because I, a little bit like my colleague to my left, Sherry, brought up a good point that I'm still struggling with the idea that, despite what you've said, Vice Chairman, that you don't need it. That these are people all pay into the redevelopment area, and so I'm not sure yet whether I'm fully behind the idea of cutting some of them out.
Because we're also talking about a very small amount of money in the overall picture.
True.
Would they pay in just for that?
Well, let's not get into philosophy, but it's a small amount of a small amount is what you're saying. I understand. But when you're not eligible, you're not eligible for any of it. So I'm still wrestling with that, is what I'm telling you.
No, I mean, they're also not beautifying my street, not redeveloping all these districts. So, I mean, there's just, it's a redevelopment area, and it's the core, I think, is what we're concerned with here.
Right, and one of the reasons that we've spent so much money as a community on our major corridor is to bring people downtown. And they don't normally go in, the visitors may go in to the Blue Line area, but for the most part, we're trying to bring people into the commercial, whatever commercial means.
Well, I'm not saying I won't be for it. I'm just going to hear everything at that end before I make up my mind, which is what I tell everybody about my Board of Supervisor vote.
So on the tax deferral, I don't have a problem with saying that's not an incentive, given the board's decision. But, I mean, I think that's logic enough for my point of view.
Well, obviously, I voted that way, so I don't have a problem at both levels.
Another motion?
A motion for issue number two.
Yeah. I move that we recommend to the Redevelopment Authority that the historic tax deferment is not a disqualifying thing. Yes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Third eligible improvements.
I personally believe that you cannot improve a facade without painting, so therefore I make a motion that painting is an eligible improvement.
The way it's written, or the way the alternative that was given to us as part of a overall facade, or are you just saying the paint?
Well, I think just about every grant that we have granted over the past couple of years has all included painting. So that, I mean, you can't put up an awning on a building that's peeling. So I think painting is a very important element for the overall improvement.
I agree with you, but my question is just paint, or as the alternative says, paint as part of a facade that has other aspects to it?
I like option B there, where it's you know, you're doing something else and it needs to be painted, not just paint.
Yeah.
I'm weighing in differently on that for a second. If you're define facade. Again, it's curb appeal. It's what you're looking at when you're walking by the house. So maybe you don't have to do a whole lot of other stuff. You're not putting in some new awning, or you're not doing something else. But if you're walking down, you've got four houses in a row, and three of them look great, and one of them's got paint peeling all over the side and mold creaking out of the cracks, you're going to tell me that painting that is an improvement to the facade or front or beautification of the home?
I agree with you. I'm just trying to get clarity.
I'm trying to keep it simple, too. I like A. Couldn't you do allow painting as part of the improvement? Because I agree with you, Ronnie. Any facade improvement needs to include painting, but I don't think it needs to be disqualified if it's just painting.
I don't have strong feelings. I'd be happy to go with A. It's fine.
Well, sometimes all a facade improvement needs is to be repainted.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Okay, my motion stands.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
So the last topic was discretionary approval, and it did come up again. And I think it came up in the light of there was some disbelief that you don't have discretionary approval to deny it. Now, certainly you have discretionary approval to review and deny it, but I think as we've talked about a little bit, it needs to be based on something that's substantial and in the guidelines. So I don't know, based on this discussion, Dan, are there any other recommendations you have that need to be included into the policy as written?
So if you know, if I may make a suggestion, I think based on, you know, this committee's actions with respect to numbers 1 through 3, with the discretionary review item, I mean, if you want to trust me with taking the first stab at providing some parameters, because I think we're going to come back with that. And I think what I said earlier on the record, which would be, you know, hey, do we want to look with those types of discretionary review standards, be looking at the overall merits of the project, whether that contributes to the overall purpose intent of the facade improvement program, which is to contribute to, you know, the aesthetics and the beautification of the downtown area. I don't have specific language off the top of my head, but it would be something along those lines. And because I think the direction of the committee earlier was that we're going to come back to this committee anyway with some language, and then with the map, right, that Lee was going to show? No, okay, so if I misunderstood and we're going to skip that process and go directly to the board, those are some of the points that I'm kind of thinking of in my head out loud.
Well, I think so, and I think that, you know, we kind of took a lot of the guessing out of the discretionary by 1 through 3, and I think last time the reason this came up so much is because some people were trying to follow the letter of the law, some people were trying to read into stuff, and that's kind of why we got into the issue that we did. So
I do believe, if I recall correctly, that there may have been a statement at the Board of Supervisors appeal hearing where the question was posed as to, well, if if there is no discretion and really all you're doing is going down a punch list, then what really is the point of the application coming to this body in the first place, right? Because I mean, approval or denial could be purely administrative with staff or with Lee, for example, right? So, I mean, I know that's philosophical in part, but also from a technical perspective, I mean, that's a valid question. So if you did want to, basically include in this resolution a catch-all provision which says, you know, something along the lines, again, of notwithstanding whether or not you meet all the criteria as your basic or your minimum qualification requirements, the ultimate decision still rests with the committee, you know, in looking at the overall merits of the project that's being proposed. So, again, something along those lines, but I don't have the exact language off the top of my head.
I think that would be great, because I think there are things that are going to come up that we haven't thought about tonight and people haven't thought about, and I think at that point we do have to have some discretionary ability to say, okay, it's close, but, you know, for whatever reason or another, we're going to approve or deny it. So if you want to write that up for us, Dan, that would be great.
But I could think of one, which is when, like, the building, like, historic district, I guess, or the historic resource committee doesn't have to approve painting, but suppose someone wanted to paint, like, Stuart, like St. Charles Hotel, like neon green or something, as part of branding. We said that we don't think that's an improvement, and that's the kind of scenario that, you know, they want to do something bizarre. Yeah, it's the only thing I could think of. But it might be. Well, I'm not sure about that.
Yes, I'd want to exercise my discretion on that.
Yes.
Under those circumstances.
Okay, so on that whole, so open discussion on any of the stuff we just, before I move on to the next agenda item?
Could you make a motion on the discretionary to give direction to the district attorney's office?
Motion that Dan's going to. I make a motion that our chief deputy district attorney comes back to us with some wording with regards to our discretionary ability on that the board comes back to us. Let's start over. I remove my motion. What do you guys want me to do?
Well, it depends on your comfort level, but we're kind of looking. I think we have the whereases and things built into this as to the purpose of the facade improvement program, and I think Dan's talking about writing some discretionary verbiage to include that you get the ability. You ultimately have the ability to ensure that the improvement that you're reviewing meets the goals of the program and give them direction to come up with verbiage that accomplishes that, right? To give them direction to come up with verbiage to do that and to forward to the redevelopment authority. No, so my suggested motion for the record that you can accept or not would be to give direction to the district attorney's office to draft verbiage to set the goalposts, the parameters for discretion that the RAC may exercise in their review of applications based on the meeting the intent of the facade improvement program.
I think that's a great motion. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Any public comment on anything? Okay. What I'm thinking is our last agenda item for the evening is material 4B. Tentative budget allocation discussion for the Children's Museum. Lee? I'm just reading off of it. It says 4B, sorry.
So it's a tentative budget there.
Okay.
Yeah, were there some, is that in your package?
Let's go 4C. This is the blue one that you just handed me up here.
That was late material for 4B, which I discussed under 4B.
Okay.
And there may be some mislabeling on the agenda item number on there. Sorry.
So we're done.
Okay. Discussion only.
Any public comment?
No, staff. Yeah, under I have a couple things under discussion only.
Okay.
For
thank you.
Staff reports on matter related to RAC. I think you've all been contacted. I want to remind you we have a December 3rd. It's going to be a joint RAC meeting with the Historic Resource Commission. On the agenda, we're going to get a update from the new owners of Jack's Bar property on what they're doing to rehabilitate and open that property back up. We'll have somebody from the State Historic Preservation Office give a presentation on the Historic Tax Credit Program, which helps people with historic properties, which is, again, largely in the redevelopment district, to rehab and redevelop properties. And then I'll give an overview of the facade improvement program, much shorter than this discussion tonight, but just enough for the Historic Resource Commission to understand it and ask questions about it. Then also, we will reconvene as the RAC only for action items. The planning is to talk about the Gateway Feature Funding and make some recommendations regarding that. And I also want to mention that there is a Citizens Committee position that's going to be open. Jason Justice's term is coming up at the end of this year, and that position is coming open. And I'm just in case this is Jason's last meeting, which he's indicated to me, I may be spoiling his announcement.
I'll be in December. I'll be here as well. But I was going to announce it as my staff member report.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good. We'll see you in December then. Good. But I understand he doesn't plan on re-upping because he might not be here through the entire next term. So that, in addition to Lee Kennedy resigning and moving to another job, we're going to have two openings for property owners or business owners in redevelopment area number one, which is the downtown area. So we're going to announce those at the same time to try to get two members in place for the start of the year.
And Lee is,
so feel free to pass that information along. His position is going to be just 1 year because it will expire. Oh no, it's 1 year. It expires January 2020. When this announcement goes out, there's going to be one downtown property business owner full term to start 4 years, and there's going to be one partial term of 1 year. Lee Kennedy's will be it will only be 2019. And that's all I have.
RAC member reports?
That's all I was going to say. I was going to repeat up, and I was going to encourage people to apply, but now we've got two people and you've got to advertise it. So it's been a very interesting experience for me, and I've enjoyed it. You meet a lot of interesting people, so hopefully you'll have more members. Now, two seats to fill might be difficult, but good luck. But I am able to stay. You know, I think what my previous person I replaced stayed longer. I'm able to do that if that's how it's done. I don't know. I think she stayed for 6 months, so I may be able to do for a period. But it's just, yeah, I'm certainly not going to be able to do a full term. That's my reason. Enjoy it, but I know I'm not going to be more than maybe a year. That's about it. Thanks.
I'd also like to make mention that a RAC project is coming up on November 30th, and that Silver and Snowflakes Festival of Lights, beginning at 5:30 in front of the Capitol steps, and there's a lot of wonderful things planned, so hopefully we'll see you November 30th, which is the beginning of the holiday season.
Anyone else? Public comment? Everyone's good? All right. At 7:30, almost exactly 2 hours, motion to adjourn.